Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Good morning, New York. It's Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm Matthew Lynch filling in for Roy G. And
You're not Roy.
I'm Matt L. today.
Oh, my God. Well, so I can assume Roy is in jail because he's in Myrtle Beach at his bachelor party weekend.
Or getting in the hospital with a saline injection.
I don't even remember having a bachelor party. I think it was just a party at my trailer.
I had one, and I was sick through it, so that wasn't fun. It was no fun at all.
Well, you know what? They're pretty overblown, and ever since the movie with the guys, what is that called? Hangover. the Hangover. Ever since that movie, I mean, I really don't even feel like going to Vegas anymore.
Well, so, I think I had the distinction of the only person to add germs to a stripper.
Oh, that's pretty ridiculous. I see what you're. Very funny. I was thinking dirty there as opposed to clean. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to my show, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
I thought we were talking about Stripper Weekly on WFAS. Is that the show after us?
That's the show. What was before us? Was it my guy?
I don't know because I couldn't hear it. Thanks, WFAS.
Yeah, listen, I just want to let everybody know I made my way to Augusta, Georgia yesterday. Actually, I started my 8-hour drive and went halfway. I went to Greenville, North Carolina to see a baseball game. Rice University out of Houston, Texas, which for those of you that don't know is kind of like Duke. It's a place for very smart people. And they've always had a great baseball program at Rice.
It's they have one of a those lot of learning colleges.
Yeah, it's like Duke. It's like all your Ivy League schools. I would say Davidson University is a very kind of a heady kind of a place to go to school too. But I stopped in Greenville, which since I was there is a much better academic school than it was when I went there. Because when I went there, they called it EZU, which was not true because you still had to stay up all night to do term papers and you still had to study for tests and you still had to go to class most of the time. Although I got to tell you, while I was at East Carolina University in the early 70s, there was a lot of rebellion. We were still in Vietnam when I started there. We couldn't even go into girls' dormitory rooms when I first got there. But the second year I was there, there was a march on the chancellor's house. I swear to God, I can't make this stuff up. And we were on the picture of the Raleigh News and Observer, which is at the time was by far the biggest newspaper in Eastern North Carolina and still is probably as big as newspapers are today. And the center of our basketball team, who was my buddy playing cards, his name was Al Faber. I'm going to get Al in trouble here. But he's actually famous for this. The only picture they have in the Raleigh News and Observer when we did that was a picture of a 6'11", big white dude with long blonde hair being led away from the chancellor's house in handcuffs. And it didn't even say East Carolina University basketball center Al Faber being led away. It said an East Carolina student being led away. And it was, of all the kids that were there, it was Al Faber. And I got to tell you, because of that nonviolent display that we learned, by the way, from Martin Luther King, because he was murdered by probably mostly the same people that murdered John Kennedy 5 years earlier than Martin Luther King was killed, we learned nonviolence is the way to go, because people can't get that mad at you when you're nonviolent. You know, my mom always told me, if talking to somebody doesn't work, just punch them in the face a couple of times and you'll probably get your point across.
So you learned a lot from him, so you became a wrestling coach.
Yeah, well, I'm a wrestling coach, but we don't hit anybody in wrestling. You know, we use moves and
gently nudge.
Yeah, we just bury them when they're on the bottom, and we don't hurt anybody. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to my show, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm talking about why did I even get off on that tangent? Oh yeah, I stopped.
There's something about a horse in the dean's room. And
listen, let me tell you something. Let me tell you, all I need is a microphone, and I can interview myself, so it's not a problem.
Technically, that is a problem. It's called schizophrenia.
Okay. Well, I take medicine for that, so that's no big deal. So listen, anyway, I stop in Greenville, and I'm going to stay with my buddy Don, who lives in Aiden, which is like 8 miles down the road. And, you know, I walk in. They give me a press pass. I go in the press booth. It's too late when I get there to talk to the head coach and wish him good luck and all that. But a kid that played on my summer baseball team last year, a really good catcher, nationally known, Luke Lowry, his older brother Jake, won the some kind of a big award for hitting the most home runs in Division I in college baseball 2 or 3 years ago at James Madison University. Well, Luke's every bit as good as Jake, only he's twice as big as Jake. He's like 6'3", 225, 230, but he runs like, you know, he's fast, and he's a catcher on top of it. Well, anyway, I stopped watching play, and I got to see two extremely good pitchers. The East Carolina pitcher, and I feel bad for this, I can't remember, Jeff Hoffman's his name. Jeez, my memory's coming back. Jeff Hoffman pitched for the Pirates. Now, he's only a sophomore, and he'll get drafted after next year, after his junior year. He throws 93, 94, has a great breaking pitch, got a slider from hell. He faced a kid, now I forgot the kid's name, from Rice, a kid from Rice, but I don't even need to say his name because every scout in the country knows this kid. He's the number one kid they have. He's their Friday night starter. He has an earned run average about 1.25. And he also throws 93, 94, and he's got a great breaking pitch. Anyway, it was 0-0 going into the ninth inning. And if it wasn't for a broken finger on the second baseman, they brought the infield in. There were runners on second and third with one out, and they needed to make a play at the plate to keep the game 0-0. Second baseman makes a bad throw. Two runs, score, game's over. So, anyway, I get up early to yesterday, and I haven't seen enough college baseball. So I drive all the way to Aiken, South Carolina, which, if you're familiar with Augusta, Georgia, Aiken is just on the other side of the Augusta River from Augusta. It's probably 20 minutes. And I stopped there and saw a very good college coach. And for all you Division I schools out there that are looking for a college coach and recruiter, I highly recommend Jason Walk, W-A-L-C-K. I've coached against him in the Cal Ripken Collegiate Baseball League. He's a phenomenal baseball mind. He's a great kid, too. Got a wife, got a little girl 2 years old. He's the perfect coach. I stopped and saw him, just walked up, and we just, you know, he's coaching third base. And I'm standing next to the dugout. I spent about an hour there watching these guys. He's got a really good team. I want to say that they're ranked in the top 10 in the country in Division II. And he's got a closer that throws 95 miles an hour. And there were about 10 scouts there yesterday looking at him.
Yeah, that music means that it's the music. It's telling you that I have something important to say today.
Well, you say it because I'm getting ready to, like, just sing.
Well, I'm trying to get my wife to bring me a cup of coffee right now, and the best way to do that is to go to Twin Jewelers, the ultimate in personal jewelry service at Twin Jewelers. Customers become friends, and everyone gets treated like family, with locations in Yonkers and Pleasantville. Bruce, what are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about everything. We're going to talk about the Masters. We're going to talk. I'm watching the golf tournament replay from yesterday in San Antonio, Texas, because there's a handful of guys that'll be here tomorrow practicing on Monday practice rounds, and I can't wait to see them. And we're going to talk about NCAA Final Four. It's really not that exciting, except that first game helped me and hurt me, and I'll explain why when we get back. We'll be right back on AM News Talk 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BH Sports. Now, here's your host, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And I'm hey, Matt L.
Matt
I
L?
Get to do the, I'm in studio. I get to do what? The rejoins.
Will you do me a favor? Just be Matt, will you please?
I want to be Matt L. Does that mean I get to give out all my Twitter names too?
Wait a minute. Matt, what's your last name?
Lynch.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought it was Smith.
Oh, wait, no, it has to be your middle name, right? So it's C. I'm Matt C. Matt C.
You're Matt. No, you can't be
all right, I like Matt,
Matt
L.
C.
better.
No, you have to be Maddie L or Maddie C. You can't Matt, be Matt.
Matt 2 to L.
Hey, you know, I was going to tell us, you know, remember the joke? Well, it's a joke, but you call him Matt. Anyway, that's all I think about. I'm
I
Bruce
need
Hall.
To know this joke now.
I'll tell it to you after after the break. Okay. Listen, I'm going to talk a little bit about Final Four since everybody out there probably watched these two games last night. I got to watch them. I even taped them so I could watch them again. I got to tell you, I was to say I was hot. During the NCAA playoffs would be an understatement. I was 12 for my last 13 picks before yesterday, and I won one and lost one yesterday. I had the Shockers plus the 10.5, which they were actually as high as 11.5 in some places. The Shockers were leading by 12 points, 47-35 with 13:36 to play. And I got to tell you, I was like jumping up and down on the couch here in the kitchen. This guy's got such a big kitchen. His kitchen, and by the way, let me explain how
Please
this works.
Explain that.
Let me explain how this works. I'm doing a show out of one of the nicest kitchens I've ever been in. It looks like a nightclub, the kitchen. It's got, you know, I mean, it's just got so much room. It's the size of three Manhattan apartments, the kitchen here. And, you know, when you go to Augusta to go to the Masters, most people rent houses. You don't rent a hotel room. There are hotel rooms available, but they're gone early, and they go for ridiculous money, $400, $500, $600 a night. Some of them a lot more than that. It makes a lot more sense if you bring 4 to 8 people to the Masters to rent a house. And you rent a 4-bedroom house with 6 to 8 beds or a 5 or 6-bedroom house. You can bring a lot of people and just split the cost. And what a lot of people do is they'll rent a house for the week. It'll go like Monday to Monday, and you'll get a group that come in on Monday, and they'll watch practice rounds Monday, Tuesday, and even Wednesday, and then they'll leave. That group leaves Wednesday, and another group comes in. And that group will watch Thursday, Friday, you know, of the regular tournament. And then on Friday, those cats leave after the tournament, and there's a new group that's already come in, and they watch the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. So in theory, and if you have an IQ over 80 or 90, you can figure out that you can bring 20 people to the Masters and use just one house and just use 6 to 8 badges. You know, that's what most people do.
Well, you can take some pictures of the house and everything and send it to us. I can, and we'll put it up on the website. Now, Ian,
I'll do that. It's a beautiful house.
To be clear, Ian, can people still on a whim come down to the Masters? Do you have room for people or?
No, I don't. But that doesn't mean I couldn't do it. Let me explain what's going on now. And people that have gone to Super Bowls will understand this. Things are a little tight this year. A Masters badge generally is bought for anywhere from, well, if you're lucky enough to be one of the people who actually are on the list that get Masters badges, I want to say a Masters badge now is $350, which is cheap, dirt cheap. They go retail for anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000 a piece, but there are times, like maybe this year, where they start to look like they're drying up, meaning you can't even find them. Everybody that you'd normally call to find out, well, look, I need like four badges. Where can I pick them up? They don't have any. That's not a good sign. If that happens, generally the prices go up. And I think a lot of that right now is because of Tiger. This tournament had a situation when Tiger won his first Masters, and I think he won it in 1999 when he was 21 years old. Might have been 2000 or 2001. But anyway, he won the tournament that year, and Phil Knight from Nike and a lot of corporate people, IMG, all these people that represented Tiger, brought thousands of their own people, hundreds of their own people. These people don't care what they pay. They drove the prices up. And there were a lot of bad things that happened at the Masters that year. One of the things that happened at the Masters that year that was really bad was a friend of mine killed himself. And I'm not trying to put a damper on this, but that's what happens when some people that suffer from depression and are in a business where it's related to price and cash oriented, you know, it ended up being that the guy didn't have enough money, nor were there enough badges available to fill all the orders that he took. And, you know, in the middle of the night, he killed himself and was buried 2 days later. His name was Alan Caldwell. And for those of you that know about this story, you know, Alan was a great guy. He was a little league coach. He owned a liquor store in town. He was just a good guy, you know. And I actually spoke to him 2 days earlier and asked him if he needed any help, and he said no. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes things tight. Now, I'll say this, 99% of the people, maybe 95% of the people who go to the Masters every year already have their badges. They already have their houses. They're all set. It's those people that decide they want to come late, and they come anyway, and they have a lot of money, they're the ones that drive the prices up. And, you know, the Augusta National Golf Club has done a lot of great things in recent years. In my opinion, I mean, I used to not be on that side. I mean, I think I told you this, Matt, Maddie L, or whatever the hell your name is. Maddie L. Lizzle. You know, for a long time, it was almost like a fascist state here. I mean, you know, they have their rules. You did what they wanted, or you were in trouble. It's become so much more friendly here. They've done a lot of things. They bought a lot of land on the other side of Berkman's Road, which is really one side of the golf course. Yeah, Augusta National is not that large of a place. There's a huge piece of real estate right in the middle of town off Washington Road and Berkman's Road. And I forget the name of the other road on the other side. But there are three major places that occupy these, I'm guessing it's 1,500 acres or more. It's the cemetery in Augusta, which is huge. Augusta Country Club, which is actually older than Augusta National Club and is literally right on the other side of Amen Corner, on the other side of the fence. You can't see it because there's so many beautiful trees. And here's Tangent Tom again. By the way, the azaleas are just starting to bloom. and so are the dogwoods. So you couldn't come at a more beautiful time than this year. A lot of times it gets warm early, and they're done blooming, and they're all, you know, almost losing all their beautiful color by the time you get here. But it's been a pretty cold, wet winter, I think, here too. But anyway, those three places and the National occupy that land. And on the other side of Berkman's Road from the National, Berkman's Road is where the big water tower is on Washington Road. If you turn right there, there's probably a mile, maybe three quarters of a mile down that hill. And on the other side of that road, that little two-lane road, Berkman's Road, used to be hundreds of houses. Well, those houses have been bought up in the last 10 years and have been developed by the National into parking. And I mean, when you park there, it looks like you're parking on a golf course, because they put the most beautiful grass you can believe there. They don't put concrete anywhere down here. It's become parking, and some of the people that have held out at the bottom of the hill run their own hospitality, where, you know, they'll have people. StubHub has a place down there. Several major national ticket brokers have got hospitality down there. They also made several national ticket brokers have hospitality on the opposite side of Washington Road, on the other side of the course. And I'd say that, you know, there are probably no fewer than 15, 20 big homes that are nothing but corporate hospitality. Well, guess what? What Augusta National decided they were going to do is, hey, why should we let all these guys make all the money? We can do it better than anybody because we own the badges. So now they're running their own hospitality. And I'm going to tell you, it's a smart thing that they're doing. It really is. I'm Bruce Hall. And I'm ranting and raving and going on and on about Augusta National Golf Club and the Masters. Because,
well, real quick, you can't come down this time on a whim unless you are like Bill Gates, I guess. But how do people sign up to come up next year with you?
Well, no, you can give me a call anytime you want, except now I'll have to turn my phone down because I'm doing a show. Leave me a message on 1-800-466-4748. You can, and by the way, you can do that anytime. You can give me a call, 1-800-466-4748, and you can talk to me about wanting to become one of my clients during football season, or one of my clients during the baseball season, which I handicap. But yeah, I still do two major events. I do the Super Bowl, which I don't have that much fun doing anymore. And I do the Masters, which I will do till the year I die. I will bring people to Augusta the last year I'm on God's planet. Hey, for the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect homeownership. Bruce Hall. Go right ahead, Matthew.
All right. Park Avenue Med Spa, new NeoGraft hair restoration program at Park Avenue Medical Spa is going 6 months strong. Receive a $500 credit for any hair restoration treatments booked in February. More info at parkavenuemedicalspa.com. Now, what are we going to talk about in the next break, Bruce?
We're going to talk Final Four. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Masters. And we're going to talk Major League Baseball.
All right.
And, yep. That's pretty much going to take up most of the rest of the show. And we may even have a couple of we have an interview or two, one with the third base coach for the San Francisco Giants, and we may do another one with Hensley Mullins, who's become famous since he ended up coaching in the World Baseball Classic. I'm Bruce Hall. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're talking to Bruce Hall, who's live in Augusta, Georgia today. Now, has any of the action actually started yet, Bruce, or are they just practicing?
Well, I would say
playing mini golf.
Yeah, no, I'd say I'd say Tiger's been here probably all week. A lot of the guys that have bypassed, Freddie Couples is playing. I'm sure he's here. There's a lot of guys. I'm sure more. You know, I'm sure there's 25 to 30 of the top invitees. Some from Europe and international guys are already here, and they're here because A, they can be here. They're former champions or they've qualified. There's a lot of different ways you qualify for the Masters, several different ways, and we'll go over that a little bit. You know, being on the top 50 on the money list, being in the top 25 in the European order of merit, you know, whatever if you're a former champion, you're automatically invited. Unless they actually work out a deal with you because you're so slow and you've been here so long and you really never break 80 anymore, they ask you not to come back, but they don't say that. The guy just says, well, I just think it's time for me to not come back anymore. And you know, I mean, and it makes sense. Although there's a lot of people that really love to see these guys show up. Guys that you might not see much longer here. Look, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player. I think Gary might have played last year. Gary still competes, but he's in better shape than Arnie and Jack, and he's a little younger too. Greg Norman never won here, and that's why you don't see Greg Norman here. And that's sad because Greg Norman could compete. Freddie Couples won it. He'll be here till he's 65, 70 years old. A lot of guys like that. You know, Phil Mickelson and Tiger, they'll play into their 50s, certainly. It's just a lot of fun. And there's a lot of guys here right now. Now, some of the older guys and some of the former champions, they're allowed to stay in the cabins on site. They have built, from what I understand, more cabins too, which is kind of a neat corporate thing that they're doing. It's just so much stuff going on. It's every golfer's dream to come here and play. My friend Bruce Bochy, who you know, Matt, you've
personally,
met on the phone.
We're good friends.
Yeah, you're tight.
I give him some tips every time
he calls in. He talks to you before he talks to me. But the great thing about Boch is he finally got to play the National this year. He and Dave Righetti and a couple of the owners and, you know, a handful of other people and, of course, a member or two, because you have to play with a member. They came down and played, I want to say, mid-February. And Boch shot like a pair of 86s. They played 36 holes. And he said that, you know, it's the greatest thrill he's ever had. I played 36 holes several years ago, and I had a great time too. Although I didn't break 90. I shot a pair of 92s. But I did birdie number 16 from 1 foot away. I almost made a hole in one on 16. Typical Sunday. I won't go into that. But anyway, I'm looking outside at number 12 green at Westlake Country Club through the shades in my huge kitchen. By the way, I'd like to thank J. Michael Spence. I paid for his house. I mean, I literally bought him this house in the last 20 years. But I'd like to thank him for always thinking of me and letting me rent this house every year when he could get a little more money than he gets from me. But I mean, I started out when Michael was just a young attorney, renting his house. And I love playing Westlake because it's a great course. And the greatest part about it is I could just carry my clubs out and pick up and hit a tee shot on number 13 and walk in with those guys and then pay for my 18 when I get in. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to me, Loving Life in Augusta, Georgia, the week before the Masters starts. Practice rounds Monday, tomorrow. Monday is the only day I go in on practice days. And the reason I only go in Monday is Tuesday I'm busy playing golf or doing something. Wednesday is the par three tournament, which is now on ESPN, I think, every year. And, you know, it's a big deal. You know, all the guys play with their little baby kids and they do the, you know, it's a lot of fun, but it's a madhouse over there. Rodney Dangerfield has just pulled up to Michael Spence's house.
And someone who's coming on a whim.
Yeah, Rodney's got his own key. Rodney has never played. He gets no respect. So he's never been able to play the Masters. But Rodney does cheat his way onto Westlake, and he'll play 18 today with me. And Rodney's been dead for several years. But in my heart and in my mind, Rodney Dangerfield will always be alive. Let's talk a little bit about this thing we call the Final Four. March Madness, yadi-da, yadi-da. And by the way, if you were wondering why people hate Jim Boeheim, you know, all year, all you had to do was watch the press conference after, and you know why everybody hates Jim Boeheim. And I'll just leave it at that, because we have a lot of Syracuse faithful, I'm sure, that listen to the show. But I love Jimmy Boeheim. Talk about a golfer. The guy's like a two handicap. He's one of the best golfers, amateur golfers, I'm sure, that's a college basketball coach. But, you know, he just can be such a pain in the butt when you're, you know, he's just not, he just needed to answer the guy and shut up. But Louisville started this tournament out as the number one seed completely in the tournament. And Louisville also, you know, ironically enough, they have the best team. They've made it all the way to the final two teams. They won yesterday, and they came from way behind. They were down by 12 points with 13:36 left to play against the Shockers, Kirstie Alley's favorite team, by the way, Wichita State Shockers. Yeah, no, she's big on Twitter, buddy. You need to follow Twitter. Kirstie Alley's exactly my age, and she looks about as good as I do at my age. She's a beautiful woman.
I thought that was just some kind of inside joke about
No.
Like, oh, she's actually a fan.
I think she's an alum.
Okay.
But anyway, Louisville plays in their division in the Midwest, the 16th seed in the first round. They didn't even need to play that game. Why they played that game, I have no idea. They win 79-48, okay? North Carolina A&T, please. If we're going to get the best teams in the country to March Madness, we got to leave out some of these conferences that are just terrible. That's one of them. Then in the second round, they play a Colorado State team that's supposed to be pretty good this year. Well, they're not so good. They lose 82-56 to Louisville, and they qualify for the regional finals. They then go up against a good Oregon team, which, by the way, was one of my covers. One of my covers that I had in the tournament. And they do. They stay close to Louisville. It wasn't really a good game the whole game. I watched it. But they lose 77-69 to Louisville. Now Louisville is in the finals against the 2-seed Duke Blue Devils of that region. And that's exactly the way it's supposed to work out. At first, I didn't think Duke was the 2-seed. I was wrong. I thought Michigan State was the 2-seed. Michigan State loses to Duke 71-61 in the semifinals. Then they go up against Duke, Louisville does. They destroyed them, absolutely destroyed them on Easter Sunday. And I remember I listened to that game Easter Sunday. Now, this is the third break here, right, Matt?
Yes, it is. And you're supposed to tell us something very important.
I am going to tell you something very important. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall, and we'll be back in a minute.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
No!
And we are talking Final Four. And last night, I will admit, I didn't watch any of the games because I'm a nerd and I was watching Doctor Who. But all over Twitter, there was something about a bad call on a jump ball.
It was a jump ball right at the end of the game. They were down three. Actually, the guy had was shooting two free throws. And he makes the first one. He misses the second one. It's tipped back. There's a scramble for the ball. It's obvious that the guy had the ball, the Shocker had the ball, but a guy for Louisville reaches in, and he does a really good job of reaching in with one hand, and it looks like he never really got the second hand on the ball. And I'm pretty sure the way the rule is read that you have to have two hands on the ball for a jump ball, but they called it a jump ball right away. And nowadays they don't jump, you know, during the game. They only jump the start of the game.
Well, you weren't the only one who was thinking that, because everybody on Twitter was just like, that's the worst call ever. I was like, aren't you guys supposed to be watching Doctor Who?
You know what? You don't, you know what? Here's
my nerd friends were saying that.
Well, your nerd friends are nerds, but I love nerds. But anyway, here's the deal, Matt. When you officiate a game, first of all, for the first, you know,
time in a generation?
Yeah, no. For the first three quarters and a half, they let both teams play. They didn't call anything. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, in the last two or three or four minutes, they started calling everything. There was a lot of talk about how this officiating crew was not consistent, and I agree with that. But I thought it was a terrible call, because I'm going to let it be played just a little longer before I blow the whistle for a jump ball in a national championship semifinal game. Because here's the deal. If the Wichita State team controls the ball there, they can dribble down, shoot a three-pointer, and we go into overtime. It's not like they were out of the game. Hello? Oh, sure. They had covered. Yeah. And if I'm greedy, if I'm the greedy bastard who just cares about the spread and not the game, I don't want it to go into overtime, because they could lose by 12 points in overtime and I don't cover. But.
You make a lot of accusations here.
There's no accusation there. Right. I mean, no, this referee crew didn't do a very good job. They were kind of inconsistent. But, you know, to side with them a little bit, it's a pretty big game. Plus, Louisville is so quick. Now, listen, these guys were out of it. I mean, not out of it, but they looked out of it for a long time. They just were flat. But the one thing Pitino, and I don't know if anybody saw saw Pitino when he was giving all of his 20 post-game comments. You'd think that the guy is a preacher. This is a guy that got in trouble. I mean, you know, they talk about this guy at Rutgers who was hitting his players and kicking his players and throwing balls at his players and doing all this stuff. Well, Pitino was caught, hands down, and admitted to having sex with somebody that wasn't his wife on a table in a restaurant, and didn't lose his job. I want to say that was in...
He didn't do it at practice.
No, that's exactly right. He didn't do it to a young man like...
And he didn't insinuate that the sexuality of the young woman that he was having sex with in that table was anything but heterosexual. So it was fine.
You know, you really should be working for the Obama administration, man. So anyway, let's talk about this game. I want to finish up. Now, Louisville beats Wichita State 72-68. But you could just tell, I mean, literally the game was over almost instantaneously after that, because they didn't have any more timeouts, okay? And the Wichita State guys are walking off the floor, and they got to be thinking, that wasn't a jump ball. You know? I mean, I would have had to walk up to the guy. Of course, they ran off the court, the referees.
If any of them would have been on Twitter, they'd be like, I know, that's what I was saying. I was there.
Well,
everybody was saying.
Yeah, it wasn't. But you know what? There was another angle of that that actually showed that the guy did tie him up for a pretty – he tied him up longer than I thought he was tied up. But at the same time, I didn't think he had two hands on the ball. But then again, you know, I'm 59 years old. My eyes aren't as good as they used to be. But, you know, a lot of people would argue they're a lot better than most referees and umpires. I'm Bruce Hall, and my eyes are better than most referees and umpires. And I have better judgment than them. But because I only have one life to live for my life, I guess that's a quote. This is what I do. I don't referee and I don't umpire. I coach. I manage baseball. Hey, I haven't missed a call in baseball in years.
Are you calling umpires and mortals?
No, I'm calling them blind. I'm calling. Well, hey, some of the umpires, even the ones that have tossed me, we're best friends. And you know what? They know their weaknesses. I know my weaknesses. You know, I may drop 14 or 15 F-bombs on them while I'm walking off the field after they've ejected me. But at the end of it all, I'll buy them a beer. And, you know, we'll hug and say goodbye, and I won't get thrown out of another game because I got it out of my system. But sometimes you got to let them know that, hey, you know, get it right, moron. You know, don't just think that this game is about you. We'd play this game without you because I got 9 great players on these two teams. We'll call the game from the dugout. And by the way, I could call the game. I've called the game from behind the pitcher's mound several times in scrimmages. One time almost got killed by a line drive too. I'm Bruce Hall, and I am not infallible. My son, by the way, he's going to hate this if he's listening to the game.
I heard this story, so
Did you?
Be careful with your terminology.
I'll give him the G-rated. I'll give him the G-rated version. Okay. But my son pitches. He's a fifth-year senior. Poor kid's only played 2 actual years of baseball. And both years he's pitched really well. He's at Shepherd University in West Virginia. They have a really good hitting team. Unfortunately, their head coach from last year left and went to Mary Washington or somewhere. And he went to Mary Washington University because the head coach there took an assistant job at GW University because the Pirate hitting coach, I mean the Pittsburgh Pirates, took the head job at GW. So anyway, they've got interim coaches. These guys are great guys. They're real nice guys. They're not even that old. They're probably in their 20s. And they were assistant coaches in the past several years. And but anyway, Davis is pitching yesterday. Some guy evidently tattoos a ball, hits him right in the groin area. I'll just say that. And which is, you know, that's a perfectly nice thing to say. And I asked him, you know, when he got home, I said, well, did you get hit in your left groin area or your right groin area? And are you okay? And he said, Dad, I didn't get hit in either of those groin areas. I got hit in the middle. Oh, my God. So, but he finished the game. I think he threw 8 innings. He probably threw an inning or two too much because he was done early, I'm sure. But they don't have any pitching. Oh, I started to talk about this guy that left for Mary Washington. He didn't leave any pitchers except Davis, who was only eligible this year for 1 year there, and a great left-hander named Paul Hozdovic, who now he's thrown so many innings in the last 2 years, he's not nearly as good a pitcher as he used to be. And it's sad because most college teams have about 17 to 20 pitchers. I've got 17 or 18 on my summer team right now. And I had 16 last year, and I ran out of pitching the last week. So, yeah, because you can't throw a kid every game. And, you know, they're just getting tired. But anyway, it's fun watching baseball. I did tell you that I stopped at East Carolina. I stopped at USC Aiken, and I'm taking those coaches out to dinner tonight. But let's talk about this March Madness. You know, is it me or is it anticlimactic, Matt, that once you get down to the Final Four, it's really not that exciting anymore? You know what I mean?
For me, it's the fact that it's not March anymore. I think it should be in March. That's my basketball analysis. I'm like, well, it's not March Madness anymore. It's April sadness.
No, but let me just tell you this. The best weeks of March of the NCAA basketball tournament are the first few games. You know, when there's, you know, 68 teams, and then there's only half as many.
That is when people like me who don't follow basketball can actually be into it, because you're just like a team like Florida Gulf Coast.
Oh,
Florida! And you're like, hell yeah, go!
They're unbelievable. Well, you saw what that guy just did, right? No, I mean, didn't he just take a job at USC? Yeah, I think so. I think he's going to Southern. He took the job in Southern California, I think. Yeah, maybe I got it. Maybe then, I haven't mixed.
Yeah, the guy's like George Mason from a few years back.
Oh, yeah.
Took another job too, right?
Yeah, well, guess what? Did you see who won NCAA Coach of the Year? Jim Larrañaga, former George Mason University coach, now at the University of Miami, where they cheated in football for how many years? Anyway, it's Miami. What are you going to say? Hey, listen, let's talk about how the other team got there. And that other team than Louisville is none other than the Michigan Wolverines. And the thing I liked the most about Michigan early on in this tournament was I liked the fact that these guys were so young. They have four freshmen that play regularly on that team. They have one sophomore, you know, that plays quite a bit. I don't even know if they have a junior that plays. They have one senior or two seniors that play. But I'm telling you right now, this Michigan team, they open up with South Dakota State, a 13 seed. Hey, you do realize that I have nothing to say this time.
I know, but it's getting towards the top of the hour. And
Maddie L.
So
well, you know what?
We're going to have to talk about Michigan in the next break, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about Michigan, and we'll talk about who I predict to win the tournament. And then guess what we're going to talk about? My favorite subject in the world, baseball. We'll be back in a minute on
Talk first, Ray. And we also I have a story for this week. Yeah, I have a story for this week.
Will you tell it?
Yes, it involves Joe Flacco and yeah, I know. And I'm not sure. I need to get your take on see if it's if it was an April Fool's Day joke or not.
Oh my God!
All right, we'll be back in a minute. On AM 1230 WFAS.
Good thing.
Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
So, Bruce, today we're gonna break away from the basketball for a minute and talk about acting.
Oh my God,
acting
to be or not to be. That is the question.
Shakespearean acting inside the actor's studio. Quality acting is what we're going to talk about right now. Who's the next guest on Inside the Actor's Studio?
Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacco is going to play Johnny Unitas in a biopic.
How cool is that, though? And you know who really requested this? Who requested this was his son, Johnny Unitas' son. He thinks Flacco, even though Flacco is 6'6", 235, and his dad was 6'1", 194, he thinks Flacco is exactly like John. And if you know anything about both guys, they're both low-key guys, they're both blue-collar backgrounds, they're both, you know, not rah-rah guys. Johnny Unitas was maybe the great – he might have had more to say about what an NFL quarterback became with a drop-back pass thrown to Raymond Berry, John Mackey, Lenny Moore. The Baltimore Colts were unbelievable. Plus, it's that Baltimore thing. I mean, I'm happy for Joe. They don't even have to pay him.
You can't find an actor to do it.
When I think of
Joe Flacco, I don't exactly think of the word drama.
Storytelling.
Hey, that was cool. I just threw that ball.
No, but listen to me. When you think about Johnny Unitas' story, you don't think of super excitement either. I mean, it's going to be a story about a kid that grew up near Pittsburgh that, his parents worked in the coal mines. Pretty sure John had a coal mine job even when he was in his teens. He never went to college. No, but you got to listen. No, you're not listening to me. You know, listen to me. I know a little bit about this. He really never played. How did he get in the NFL?
Well, I don't know anything.
Tell me that, Roy. Tell me that.
The only thing I know about it is that my grandfather has a signed photo because he played with him on the Baltimore Colts.
Yeah, but listen, Johnny Unitas played for semi-pro teams forever. For like 2-3 years. And he finally got a tryout with the Colts. And the first time, I'm pretty sure he didn't make the team. Then he went back to playing and working. And, you know, the reason you play semi-pro ball is because you have a real job. So he was doing his real job and playing semi-pro on the weekends and practicing maybe one day a week. And all of a sudden, he got another tryout with the Colts, and he made the team as a backup. And then somebody got hurt, the head guy. The number one starter at quarterback, and guess who became Johnny Unitas? None other than Johnny Unitas, and I bet he was about 24, 25 years old when he signed. Now, I could Google that, and I could look it up, but I'll let you do that and find out how old he was when he first started playing for the Baltimore Colts. But he never went to a big college. See, he might have gone to like a two-year school like Millersville or somewhere. You know,
see, I'm not arguing that this isn't a great story. It could be great movie. We haven't had a great sports movie in a while.
I'm bored. Yeah, I'm already bored with it. I mean, it'll be, you know, what'll be good about it? The action, because it's Flacco. He knows how to play football, and I got a feeling that has a lot to do with why they got him to play it, because they're obviously going to have a lot of shots of real games. And they can make, you know, a choreographed game look pretty damn good nowadays. Mm-hmm. But what makes it look better than having an NFL MVP play the guy in the movie? You know, it's going to be a good movie.
All right,
it's
like so having, quickly, I'm going to name some, I'm going to name some, you know, legendary guys, and you're going to tell me who should play them in the movie. First off, Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan.
It's got to be a tall, skinny black man. What's the name? Now, what's the name of the guy that played with Jackie Chan or whatever his name is? Chris Tucker, the Michael Jordan story.
Hey, man.
Hey, let's play golf. Who wants to play poker? Hey, come on. Anybody got a cigar?
I'm gonna have to give you a pass on that one. Next one, Joe Montana.
Okay. Oh, you know who looks just like Joe Montana? The guy that played opposite John Mara's daughter in Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. What's the guy's name? He was James Bond.
James Bond. All I know him is James Bond. I can sort of see that. If
he looks exactly like Joe, except for
I've ever seen that guy smile, though, and Montana was a big smiler.
No, Montana doesn't smile hardly at all.
Oh, he's known for his smile.
You got to trust me.
I'll trust you on that one. Dan Marino.
Oh, God. Dan Marino. This is a hard one. The guy that just got in all the trouble, who used to be a great actor, and he's been in so many drug rehabilitation centers.
You mean every actor ever?
No, but listen,
Lindsay Lohan in the Dan Marino
story.
No,
but I'm sure she's been with this guy. This guy, do you remember the movie Heat? that had Al Pacino and Robert De Niro.
Yes.
That's one of the greatest movies of all time. He played the big guy. He also played the sergeant in Saving Private Ryan. That guy. Because he looks like Marino. That's the only reason. He's not as athletic as Marino, but he definitely can do more cocaine than Marino.
Well, you know, he did play in the 80s.
Well, and I only know that because I heard Dan Straight. So,
all right, I'm trying to think of what's another one that hasn't been done yet. Mark Rippon. All right, Doug Williams. We'll do Doug Williams.
You know, I'm trying to think who would be a good Doug Williams.
Denzel. You got to go with Denzel with Doug Williams.
Yeah, he's not as big as Doug, though. But he looks a little bit like Doug.
Yeah, he can do it, man. He's
a lot better looking than Doug Williams, though. If you told Denzel Washington, he looked like Doug Williams, he'd smack you right in the face.
Yeah. All right, so I think that's all I got. You got anything?
Yeah, that's good. No, I don't. I absolutely don't. Hey, you want to talk baseball real quick?
I don't, but I'm sure you do.
Well, let's talk a little bit.
No, we got to finish up on Final Four, Michigan.
Oh, that's right. All right, now you got me going back. So anyway, Michigan got there and just pretty much destroyed everybody, at least that I could see. They started out, like I said, playing – let me think who they played in the first round. They played – who did they play? I'm looking right now. No, they played South Dakota State. And there's another team. Why is South Dakota State even there? Well, you know what?
Why is South Dakota even a state? That's what I want to know.
Well, why isn't it just Dakota and then just keep North and South Dakota? By the way, do you know what they have in North and South Dakota that they don't have a lot of other places in the United States? Jobs. Their unemployment rate's like zero up there. Could that be because
they have zero people there? There's one guy.
No, he has a job
and he's counting how many jobs there are.
No, you're a typical liberal who doesn't know the real answer. You obviously
don't
know.
They have a snowflake counter.
No, they're building plants up there, and they're giving jobs to people. Saskatchewan. Their unemployment rate's zero. They're trying to get people to come up there and work, and they're paying them six figures. Anyway, let's get back to basketball. South Dakota State wasn't that bad. They lost by 15 to Michigan, so they belong. Then Michigan plays Virginia Commonwealth. A lot of people took VCU. By the way, this was my first loss in my first 12 games. I had VCU. Michigan beats them by 25 points. Then Michigan plays, guess who? Kansas. They beat Kansas by two. And Kansas was the number one seed in the South. Then they beat Florida by 20 points. For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership.
All right, when we get back, we'll finish up on the Final Four, talk some baseball, and maybe we'll think of some more actors that could play famous athletes.
That would be great.
All right.
That sounds good.
We'll be back in a minute. I hate to feel it when you're looking at me that way, because we're North Americans, but if we act all shy.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation anytime by calling 240-317-7294. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
So we're talking about Michigan and the Final Four. We're going to finish up on that, talk some baseball, and we're going to throw up an interview in the next segment. So how did Michigan State get to where they are right now?
Well, Michigan State got beat. You're talking about the University of Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're pretty much done. I mean, they won last night. You know, they beat a good Syracuse team that I thought was destined to possibly win everything. And what they did was they penetrated the 2-3 zone with some different stuff. They played great on the offensive and defensive boards. They out-rebounded Syracuse is what they did. And they ended up kind of winning, not easily, but they won fairly easily. I mean, Syracuse pulled it within two, but for most of the game, the Wolverines were in charge. And this team could win it, but from what I understand in the finals of tournaments, I want to say their record's 1-5, this group. So, you know, there's a good chance they're not going to win it. I think Louisville is kind of destined to win it ever since that poor kid shattered his leg on national television. He's been on Jay Leno. He's been everywhere. I mean, the kid could never have done any of that if he hadn't have had stress fractures already in his tibia or fibula or whichever of those lower leg bones he broke. Already had his anyway, that's fine.
I've actually been able to avoid seeing that. Just hearing about it was enough to keep me off Facebook for a day or two, just because I had some friends who would have posted pictures of it.
You're going to find this hard to believe, but I haven't seen it either. Because when we were – that was actually on Easter Sunday, and I was with my daughter at Gettysburg College because my car had broke down, and I was in the process of trying to get AAA to send a tow truck to pick it up. And that's exactly when it happened. And Emily told me, you don't want to see this. So I didn't look at it. My daughter's never told me a lie in her life. I'm going to go over some scores of yesterday's baseball games. And I'm going to talk about these teams briefly. The Angels beat the Rangers. A lot of good players on both teams. Both teams could be very disappointed when it comes time for the playoffs later on. Albert Pujols, after getting a real slow start, hit two bombs yesterday and walked three times. So he was 5-for-5 on base. He led the Angels to an 8-4 victory. Mark Trumbo hit a bomb. Peter Bourgeot hit a bomb for the Angels. Tommy Hansen, who, you know, has been a fairly good pitcher for the Atlanta Braves for the past few years. He had originally signed with Atlanta. He got the win for L.A., and I'm happy for Tommy because he looked like crap in spring training. He was terrible. Anyway, Pujols is only hitting 188, but it's early. The Detroit Tigers, talk about the Yankees, beat the Yankees 8-4 yesterday. Tigers hit 14 singles and 3 doubles, and they outscored the Yankees 8-4. The Yankees bullpen could not keep them close enough to have a chance. Phillip Hughes got the start. He looked horrible. He only went 4 innings, gave up 4 runs. Boone Logan and David Phelps and Jabba Chamberlain gave up 4 more runs and 9 hits in just 4 innings of relief. I'm telling you, Melky Cabrera, there's just no way that, the Tigers, Max Scherzer got the win. He's a great young pitcher. But the Yankees are in trouble, and I think everybody knows that. St. Louis Cardinals beat my Giants 6-3. Even though Hunter Pence and the Panda, Pablo Sandoval, went yard, Pablo gave an interview yesterday. It was real interesting. He said somebody asked him how he was seeing the ball, and he said he wasn't seeing it good at all. Then he hits a bomb yesterday. He's about 30 or 40 pounds overweight, but he can still square it up. I worry about him defensively. Rookie pitcher Shelby Miller went a little over. He went 5 1/3 innings for the win for St. Louis. And my buddy Ryan Vogelsong got the loss. This is like one of the worst outings he's had all year so far. But they'll be back. Giants aren't going anywhere. Toronto beat the Red Sox. All Yankee fans like to hear that the Red Sox got shut out. Toronto got all 5 of their runs on bombs by Colby Rasmus in a 3-run bomb. And Sebia, their catcher, hit a 2-run bomb, and they shut out the Sox 5-0. J.A. Happ got the win for the Toronto Blue Jays. He beat out Ricky Romero, who last year signed a pretty good deal, long-term deal with Toronto, and he doesn't even make the squad, which leads me to believe, like, A, he's either got arm problems, or B, they got a lot of talent. And it may be both. He threw 5 1/3 innings, only gave up 1 hit, and he punched out 6 batters. John Lackey, who signed a huge deal with Boston 3 years ago and still sucks, pitched 4 1/3 innings, struck out 8 batters, but the Red Sox only managed to get 2 hits the entire game off of J.A. Happ and 3 Blue Jays relievers. So, Yankee fans, at least you don't have to worry about the Red Sox being the team that wins the East. It's, even if it's not you, it won't be the Red Sox. The Mets, John Neese and 4 Mets relief pitchers scattered 11 hits and 3 runs. David Wright went 3 for 4. My buddy from Chesapeake, Virginia, scored 2 and drove in a run. John Buck drove in 4 runs for the Mets, and they're going to like John Buck. He drove in 4 runs with a pair of sac flies and a double. That's a pretty interesting line score. Ricky Nolasco pitched for Miami, and he looked phenomenal against the Nationals in his first outing, but he didn't look quite so good in this game. And Webb got the loss. Nolasco didn't. Tampa Bay shut out Cleveland. Alex Cobb, who's another one of their great young pitchers for the Tampa Bay Bucks, he's 25 years old. He four-hit the Indians over 7 1/3 innings to pick up the win. The Indians were shut out for the second game in a row. Now, the Indians, as you know, have a brand-new manager and have a lot of new players that they're paying some money to. They've got our boy Swish there, who, by the way, the more I hear about Swish in Cleveland, the more I hear he's out of his mind. Oh, in a good way. He's just not all there. Rodney, I'll be right there. Rookie phenom Trevor Bauer started for Cleveland, and he only gave up 2 hits in 5 innings. But as a baseball coach and manager, you worry about a guy that walks 7 batters. That's a lot of pitches. Only had 2 Ks. Cobb and 2 relief pitchers held the Indians to just 5 hits. Tampa Bay 6, Cleveland 0. The Oakland A's beat the Houston. God, they need to change their name to the Houston AA players. Coco Crisp, Jed Lowry, Seth Smith all hit solo bombs to lead the A's to the win. The Astros, you know, you got to root for them because they're so bad. You know, they're only spending $25 to $30 million total. The Yankees are at, what, $230? It's hard to be competitive when you're not paying anybody any money, especially when you're not paying anybody that kind of no money. That's nothing. Evidently, you know, I mean, just to give you an example of what that's like, what is the guy's name? A-Rod? Yeah, that's it. I forget his name because I haven't seen him in so long. But Alex Rodriguez for the Yankees makes more money than their entire team this year. Bartolo Colon gave up a 3-run homer to Castro in the 4th inning, but that's all Houston got. Bud Norris picked up the loss. He's their best pitcher by far. Not even close. Hey, we'll be back in a minute. And you got something to say?
No, you have something to say.
I do. For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect homeownership.
All right. Now, 2 weeks ago, you were in Scottsdale, Arizona for spring training.
Yes, I was.
We don't have the interviews from that yet, which we'll have in the coming weeks. But we do have an interview that we got last year. We haven't played yet. It's with Hensley Mullins that we're going to play in the next segment.
Yeah, can I do
this important?
Yeah. Well, it's important because Hensley Mullins ended up being the hitting coach and pretty much the manager of the Netherlands team that went all the way to the final group of teams. They actually outplayed the United States. And they went all the way to San Francisco, and then they got beat there by the eventual winner. But Hensley is probably going to be a manager in the big leagues one day, and he's one of my favorite people in baseball. We'll listen to me and Hensley Mullins talk when we come back.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BH Sports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
All right, we're going to go to the interview with Hensley Mullins right now. Bruce, do you want to set this up real quick?
Yeah. Hensley was brought up when they fired their hitting coach 3 years ago, which was a good idea because he couldn't even get one guy to listen to him. And I understand he had a job last year, this guy. I'm not even going to say his name. Everybody knows him. And he lost his job again. Really nice guy, great hitter. But he just wasn't a communicator. And you really, these guys can already hit. What a good hitting coach does is he tweaks guys. You know, he tweaks guys. If they need help, you give them help. If they don't need any help, leave them alone. And anyway, Hensley is one of the nicest guys I've ever met, a great athlete. Oh, and he speaks like five languages. This is me and Hensley Mullins last year in the dugout in Scottsdale.
I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is Bruce Hall with Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm talking to the hitting instructor, the hitting coach for the San Francisco Giants Major League Baseball Club, Hensley Mullins. Hensley, I appreciate you talking to me today.
Thanks for the invite here, and I'm more than happy to sit down and talk to you.
Listen, I mean, you know, not too many hitting instructors really are the first guys to get interviewed, basically, because you guys do so much work behind the scenes, nobody ever sees it. You know, you got 25 guys on your active roster. You got 40 on your 40-man roster. You got another 150, 200 players that are in the minor leagues, and yet you are pretty much the final guy that will be working with all these guys. Is that correct?
Well, you know, the work is ongoing. It's nonstop. You know, we get here 6 in the morning for spring training. You know, by 7:30, you're done in the cages. You know, 8:30, you're out in the field, in the backfield, working with the extra guys. And, you know, you don't stop working until 10, and then you go straight into stretching and, you know, fundamental. And then BP is an hour into it. And, you know, we just got done 11:45, you know, basically from 7:30 until 11:45, you're busy doing all the work. And, yeah, you talk to a lot of people, but you also have a lot of work to do on a daily basis.
Well, with any luck, you'll be able to get some grub in your stomach after talking to me. Hensley, let me ask you a question. Generally speaking, there's a million different ways to hit, but there's really only one set of fundamentals that actually work pretty much for everybody. Everybody's different, but you and I talk a lot. And you know me. I mean, I'm a hitting instructor like at the high school and the college level, and I love talking to guys like you. For the most part, it's all about getting your foot down. It's all about staying inside. It's about trying to keep things quiet, and it's about picking out a good pitch to hit, correct?
Well, you know, very important also starts with balance. You know, you got to have a good balance at the plate in order for those things you said to work. You know, if you don't have good balance in the plate, it's hard to have your hands work correctly. You know, your hands is what swings the bat. So you need to know at all times where your hands are shooting from. And you know, you have to put them in good position before you actually swing the bat. So there's a couple of things that happen before you get to that point, you know, and balance is a big thing for me. You know, your stride should be short, and you got to put your foot down in time, like you said, and you got to keep your posture upright. A lot of guys get leaning over the plate, and before you know it, they have trouble with it, especially the pitches middle end of the plate, which is really the pitch you should be hitting hard. But, you know, keeping a tall posture, balance in the short stride, and getting the foot down, it's all formula to get your hands firing through the zone.
And a lot of it also, it's a lot like a golf swing in some ways. You have to stay behind the ball. You can't get out on that front foot. And a lot of times what happens to a lot of hitters, and you can see it even with major league hitters, you know, they'll be full with a pitch and they're already out in front and they're wide open and they're pretty much toast when they get to that point, right?
Yes and no. I think, you know, if you have a perfect way, you want them to stay behind the ball all the time. But, you know, guys get fooled all the time, and the way to correct that or to still have success is to keep your hands back. You know, if you're going to be out in front and your hands are going to come with you, then you're in trouble. You know, if you get fooled and you're out in front and you keep your hands back, you still have a chance to hit the ball hard. But, you know, in the perfect world, you want to stay behind the ball and make sure that you know, you get the head out in front and hit the ball with authority, and you know, being up front most of the time is not a good thing.
No, I totally – you need to let the ball travel back in on you. The other thing I want to say, too, is and I'm pretty sure it's this way at the major league level also, unless you're going to be hitting a ball out of the park, you want to keep it out of the air unless fly ball, drive in, a run, correct? You want to hit hard ground balls and line drives. Is that fairly accurate?
Well, we talk to our guys about hitting line drives at any time. If you look at, they have a stat that last 3 years they track every ball that's been hit at the major league level, and the batting average on the line drive is around 700. Surprisingly enough, the batting average on the ground ball is very bad. It's like in the low 200s.
At the major league level, I can imagine you got some great fielders at the major league level.
Exactly. Plus, you have the spray charge. You have people know where to play guys. So we're talking about hitting line drives and hitting the ball in the gaps. And that's the approach we're taking this spring here, a line drive down approach. And even with the guys that have power, Pablo had led the team in home runs last year, and he only had 23. So, fly balls are outs, and we like to maximize that 700 batting average on line drive, which is a pretty good thing.
No, I totally agree. Right now there's probably around 30 guys here in camp that you're making a decision on who the 25 are going to be. Who's had a really good spring in your mind?
There's a bunch of guys that have had good springs. From the hitting standpoint, I think a guy that's surprised a lot of people is Gregor Blanco, who's played excellent outfield. He's a leadoff type hitter that we craved here in San Francisco. A guy that's had a great eye, sees a lot of pitches, he can bunt, he's played good defense. He's leading, I think, all of baseball in stolen bases. So he's been a breath of fresh air for us for sure. Brandon Crawford has made an adjustment at the plate. He's hitting the ball really well, playing good defense. We need him to keep it up with the bat so that, we don't have to worry about him just being a defensive shortstop. Brandon Bell has had a great spring. He's hitting the ball well. Seems like he gets 2-3 hits every game he plays in. But guys like that, Brett Pill has had a good spring, hitting the ball for power, driving in runs. Emmanuel Burrs has had an excellent spring training. The list is long. Melky Cabrera has come over from the Royals and had exceptional spring training. He hits the ball hard from both sides of the plate.
Yeah, he was involved in that trade with Johnny Sanchez, right?
Correct. So, we've had a bunch of guys that are making that are going to make those decisions you're talking about hard for us at the end of camp here to pick those 13 hitters who are going to take north with us.
Yeah, one of the things I always like to talk to hitters that I work with is you can't really do anything till you get to first base. Obviously, on base average is a big part of scoring runs. And for the year that the Giants actually won the World Series, their OBA was like 321, 322, right in kind of the middle. Last year they struggled quite a bit. It seemed like a lot of guys were just trying to press. Even Brandon Belt, like he felt like when he was in the major leagues, he needed to get two or three hits like you say he's doing this year every game. A lot of that is maturity for sure. What do you see this lineup doing? Do you think this lineup can get close to four runs a game? Kind of like, the Cincinnati Reds, of all people, almost score four runs a game. However, their pitching staff gives up an extra run than the Giants staff does every game. Tell me a little bit about Buster Posey and what you think about his swing. To me, he has a phenomenal batting swing.
Well, Buster is one of our best hitters. We missed him for big part of the year last year. He's back this year. He's getting into his groove. The last four or five games he's played, hitting the ball hard, hitting the ball into the opposite field gap. He's got great balance. He has a really good idea of the strike zone. He doesn't chase pitches out of the zone. He's always swinging. He's always swinging until it's the ball, or until it's the ball outside of his zone before two strikes. So those things we're trying to teach all of our young guys to do, be ready to hit every pitch until it's not a pitch you want. You can't go up there taking and then trying to swing. It doesn't work. You always got to be ready to address the ball, and Buster does a good job at it. He's very conscious of what pitchers are trying to do with him. But for the, you know, for the main part, he's staying inside balls really, really well. You know, this year he's added something to his style, which is backspinning the ball to the pool side by keeping both hands in the bat. And
I saw a couple of those balls go up on top of the hill during batting practice. They looked like outs when they left his bat, and they ended up about 60 feet over the fence.
Yeah, he's definitely made an adjustment on pitches inside, and I'm excited to have him back. He's definitely a guy that can change the game for you.
That's fantastic. All right, that's enough about hitting. Let's talk a little bit about Hensley Mullins. Hensley, real briefly, if you can, tell me what your background was in baseball, how you got started, where you ended up, you know, where you played in the major leagues, and how you got involved as a hitting instructor.
Well, I'm from a small island in the Caribbean. Curaçao is a Dutch island right off the coast of Venezuela by Aruba. Started playing when I was 9-10 years old. Signed as a professional player at 18 by the New York Yankees. Was sent to a rookie ball, played 3.5 years in the minor leagues before making it into the major leagues at just 22 years old. Played parts of 7 years with the Yankees, Montreal Expos, and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Played 3 years overseas in Japan. Also played a year in Korea. And then ended up playing 2.5 years in Mexico. You know, played the Olympics for the Dutch team. And then, you know, at the end of the 2002, actually at the middle of the 2002 season, I decided I had enough. Retired right before my 35th birthday. Went home to my home country. Started a baseball academy, the Dutch Antilles Baseball Academy. I was doing really well. And then I started coaching for the Baltimore Orioles in 2003. In 2004, I was with the Orioles at the rookie ball level, Bluefield Orioles in the Appalachian League.
My son almost went to Bluefield College this past year. I know exactly where that is. Who was your head coach down there with the Orioles that year?
I had Don Buf for 1 year. Yeah, he was excellent. And then I was with the Pirates for 4 years at AAA. Before coming over to the Giants in 2009, I was in Fresno, and then you know, the Giants were making a change at the major league level with their hitting coach position, and you know, they liked the way I work with guys at AAA. They like what I brought to the table and the experience overseas and 17 years professional baseball, and they gave me a shot at it, and we won the World Series the first year I was there.
Yeah, that was a pretty good first year that you had. I hear you speak a few languages. What languages do you speak?
Well, the Dutch is our main language. Obviously, Curaçao is a Dutch colony. Speaks Spanish. My mom is Dominican, and we also speak four languages on the island: English, Spanish, Dutch. And Papiamento is our native tongue, and I also speak Japanese.
Now, let me ask you one last question, because I know you got to get ready for this ball game in a few minutes. Excuse me, Hensley. I'll get that out of there. Let me ask you this. Is there a certain charity that you contribute to or you work for, or if somebody wants to give to a nonprofit organization that you're involved with, is there anything in particular that you do in the charity situations?
No, back home I do a lot of stuff for the underprivileged kids. You know, that's what my academy does. Gives a lot of clinics, and we do a lot of our free time on that. You know, there is underprivileged kids all over the world, and I mainly dedicate my time to them. I also make donations through those organizations with needing clothing and stuff like that. So that's what I in particular do here in the States. I mainly donate to the BATS organization, which takes care of the ex-players and ex-widows and things like that.
The guys that don't have the big pensions.
Correct, and they're going through tough times, some of them. So that's right. That's what I do.
Hensley, I want to thank you for your time. I want to wish you good luck with these hitters, and you know I'm going to be in touch with you.
All right, Bruce. Thanks a lot.
All right, well, whatever they did, it seemed to work because they went and won another World Series.
Yeah, they. I got to tell you something. The thing that I like so much about that interview is that interview you could play anytime. He is a class act. He's going to be a manager in the big leagues. There's so many things he's good at. If you heard him, he talked about Melky Cabrera, who they lost after the All-Star break because he tested positive for steroids. But he talked about Buster Posey, who he had worked with his batting swing a little bit to make him drive the inside pitch. Well, who was the MVP of the National League last year? Buster Posey. For the first time in generations, a dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. Matt's on the line. We'll be back in a minute with you on the show.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
All right, last segment, we're going to talk some baseball, some more Masters. Bruce is at the Masters right now. They're about to do some practice this week, and hey, Bruce will be there tomorrow.
Yep. Listen, let's get through these games real quick. I talked about the Yankees. I talked about the Mets. The Mets are actually, I'm happy with the way the Mets are looking right now. The Yankees aren't surprising me. Houston was the last game I talked about. The Washington Nationals, which everybody's picked to be the favorite in the National League to win the pennant this year, they blew a big lead late yesterday, but they ended up scoring two runs in the 10th inning to beat Cincinnati 7-6. They were totally embarrassed the day before, 15-0. I swear to God, that was the score.
It's a football
against
score.
Cincinnati. Yeah, but you know what? 1-0 and 15-0 count the same. White Sox beat Seattle 4-3. The White Sox jumped out. They beat Felix Hernandez, who's the highest paid pitcher right now in the league. Kid named Dylan Axelrod threw like six shutout innings, 5 2/3 innings, gave up no earned runs and only three hits to get his first win this season. Philadelphia Phillies, this is speaking of San Francisco Giants, which I do a lot of, Kevin Franzen, nicknamed Franny, was a utility infielder with the Giants for years. He got picked up last year by the Philadelphia Phillies, and he ended up playing third base. Now, Franny isn't a power hitter, so you wouldn't expect him at third. He was like a utility shortstop, second baseman. He hits a bases-clearing double in the bottom of the ninth inning after the Phillies had only had two hits the entire game. They win 4-3. They beat Kansas City. Ruined Luis Mendoza's shutout. He had six innings where he only gave up two hits. Minnesota beat Baltimore. You don't see the Orioles lose too many one-run games. They lost one yesterday, 6-5, on a single by Justin Morneau, who is a lot of people that are baseball fans remember because he sat out more than an entire year with a concussion syndrome that he had. Today is the finish, the fourth round of the San Antonio Golf Tournament. And right now I want to talk a little bit about the Masters. And we're going to talk about what's been going on with some of these guys. Obviously, the favorite right now, if you look online, to some of these online betting services, Tiger Woods is probably even money or 4-5 to win the tournament. In England, where betting is legal, I think he's a 3-5 favorite. Bubba Watson's in there. Augusta National is a course that's long, but it's a shot maker's course. If you're long and you're accurate and you can putt, you're going to be a favorite in this tournament. Freddie Couples, no matter how old Freddie is, I want to say Freddie's 52 now. No matter how old Freddie is, he'll always be on the leaderboard, at least early in the tournament. He'll always make the cut, in my opinion. Lee Westwood will always be close. Something's going on with Rory McIlroy. Nobody really knows what it is. It's just being young and being so successful as he is. I thought it was a girlfriend problem. He dates this gorgeous tennis star, and he's with her all the time. I wouldn't put all my eggs in one basket, Rory. I think I would date three or four different girls and let them all know that you're dating all of them, and see which one you like best. Because so unfortunately, when you're young, if you get your heart broken, it can take a toll on you. And I know, because I had my heart broken more than once. Jason Duffner, this kid from Auburn University. Auburn isn't getting a lot of good press right now, but Jason Duffner has shown that he can play this course very well. So, you know, there's a guy that's never, ever won this course, and actually he's never won a major, is Sergio Garcia. He's not getting any younger. This might be the year that Sergio breaks out. A guy that has, you know, came here and played this course, I think, when he was 21 years old or 20, Matt Kuchar, Georgia Tech graduate, has been playing some great golf in the last two or three years. Phil Mickelson obviously will be somewhere on the leaderboard at some time. Louis Oosthuizen, the South African kid who's won two majors, could make it a third here. It's going to be a really interesting tournament, in my opinion. I'm not, you know, there's a lot of young golfers everywhere that could make their way to the leaderboard of this tournament. The thing that's so great about this course and being here at the tournament and watching it is it's got its own heartbeat. I can be sitting on number 18 tee box, and I can hear a roar to my left, and I'll know that roar is from number 12, the par 3 at Amen Corner, because it's in a certain location to my ear. And then I'll know another roar is 15, probably, because it's loud, but it's right down the fairway from where I'm sitting on my left. And if it's 16, it's in a hollow, and it's more of an echoey scream and loud. A lot of times, by knowing where the golfers are, by looking at the leaderboards, which are everywhere, and they're all, by the way, hand done. They're not electronic here. They're easier to read when they're hand done. Electronic ones, you know, because of the bulbs, you know, depending on where you are, you really can't see it that well.
But they're put up by robots, right? There's something electronic there, right?
There's absolutely nothing electronic.
Completely analog?
Absolutely. No, it's not analog. It's literally, they have names with painting and strips with guys' names on it for when they're coming down the fairway. What they're, you know, all the numbers, they're either it's either a green number or it's either a red number. You know, a red number is when you're below par, when you're doing well. A green number is if you're above par. And I'm telling you right now, it's all done the way it was done. All the caddies here wear white full suits, basically. Not suits like you'd wear to church. I'm talking about coveralls. And on the back of their back is the name in green of their golfer. And I'm telling you right now, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about this damn thing, because this is my 28th straight match. I came here in 1986. When Jack won his sixth jacket, and he wasn't even on the leaderboard on number 14. Seve Ballesteros hit a ball in the water. Greg Norman lost two or three shots to par. Jack basically ended up playing the back nine in 30.
So basically, in 2 years, do you get a jacket of your, like an honorary jacket of your own for doing it for 30 years?
No, I don't get anything. You can actually buy the jacket, a jacket, but it won't have the national logo on it. You can buy a green jacket made by the people who make that jacket. You just can't get the logo.
I mean, I got a guy who does some good needlepoint. I got a needlepoint guy for you that can make that happen.
Hey, let me tell you, I'm looking at a picture right now of Seve Ballesteros when he won the tournament here, and the biggest grin you've ever seen in your life. Of course, we lost Seve this past year to brain cancer. He died after a long battle with brain cancer. I can tell you this right now, the azaleas are just starting to bloom. The magnolias are blooming. The weather's going to be 70 to 75 Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think it's supposed to be 75 to 80 the rest of the week. They're only – they're thinking that on Friday there'll be some showers, but they don't know, you know, they're going to be scattered. You know, a little rain never stopped this tournament, that's for sure.
All right. We have a little bit of time left. Quickly,
sure.
Tell me your top three. Who's going to finish 1, 2, and 3 today? Can you do that? Or 1, 2, and 3 this for the entire tournament?
Yeah, you know, I honestly think that Tiger's going to win this tournament. I it's a lot of pressure for him, but he's playing so well right now, and I honestly think that Tiger will win it. I think that somebody, it won't be Patrick Harrington, but either Rory McIlroy or Lee Westwood will be right there. They'll be second or third. And I would say you'll probably see somebody like a South African, like Louis Oosthuizen. He plays this course extremely well. I say, you know, any one of those three guys will win it. I don't see Bubba winning it again. I really don't. He won it. You know, Vijay Singh has been playing very well, but he's won it twice already. I don't see him winning it again. There's a guy named KJ Choi, that, you know, from Korea, that seems to always be on the leaderboard at this tournament every year. But I think Tiger's going to win.
If there's going to be an upset, or there's going to be someone, a name that's going to come out of here that nobody's heard of, who's it going to be?
Nobody's heard of?
You wouldn't expect.
You know what?
People like me.
There won't be anybody that nobody knows, because it's too hard of a course to do it on. But, like a couple of years ago, we had the South African win it that nobody had heard of. And last year he was on the leaderboard on the last day. I like Ricky Fowler. I think Ricky Fowler has a game made for this place. Ricky Fowler's the kid that wears all the Puma stuff that all the little kids follow. Because Ricky's like 24 years old, and he looks like he's 15. And he wears like this, you know, tangerine colored stuff and this lime green colored stuff. And he's really a nice kid. But I'll tell you what, he knocks the crap out of the ball and he can putt. You know, I'd like to see somebody like Ricky Fowler in it. I really would.
All right. So if someone is coming down there last minute, how do they get a hold of you?
Give me a call. 1-800-466-4748. We can definitely find a house for you, probably pretty cheap at this point, because if a house is still available now, it's not going to be going, it's not going to sell for its asking price. And you know what? We'll find you a badge. You just might have to pay a lot of money for it.
All right. And that goes for next year, too. If someone has been listening,
yep,
and they're just like, I need to get down there next year, they got a hold of you again. What's that number?
1-800-466-4748. It's 1-800-466-4748. Leave a message. Text me. If you text me, I answer faster than if you leave me a phone message. I got too many kids texting me, so I text.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week, and you'll be down there next week. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.